You're saying that she was tortured?
More an experiment.
What are you talking about, Turner?
One of them got out, sir.
Help! Please, help!
This goes beyond the badge.
I'll meet you in hell, old friend.
For Blood or Justice, Season 1.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Thriller Zone. I'm your host, David Temple, and today's show is going to be a little bit different. Off the beaten path, I suppose you could say. We're going to combine the best elements of audio, video, graphic novels, thrillers, and podcasts. Let's see. That would be called For Blood or Justice. This graphic novel has come to life thanks to Scott and Todd, their creators. And on today's show, we're going to dive deep into the world of graphic novels and podcasting. Is it a new combined medium? I think you're going to find out really quickly that it is. Very exciting stuff. And why don't I just shut up and we get into the Thriller Zone.
Slight departure from our standard thriller author interview here on the Thriller Zone. But today we're going to be discussing graphic novels and their integration into podcast, or aka audio dramas, both of which I'm completely obsessed. We are here with, as you'll see, these handsome gentlemen for those watching on YouTube, Todd Ness and Scott Weil.
Yeah, I know. The camera's eating us up, baby.
You can't get that much man candy in one place if you tried.
Hashtag man candy.
Yeah.
Guys, you're quite first the silver fox yourself.
Come on, everybody. I want to see that hashtag man candy just start ripping around the interweb right now. Web 2 and web 3.
All right. Well, welcome to the Thriller Zone. I think we got our tech issues well in hand and are ready to roll. Wow.
Wow.
First of all, as we mentioned, Todd Ness is the creator, writer, and EP of this. We're going to refer to this a couple of times, but you're really going to be seeing it in a different form later. Blood or Justice is, I'm a nut for graphic novels, and this thing is beauty. Now, I'm just going to tease you. You can't actually have this. We're going to talk about where it is currently living, which is in the audio realm, along with actor, I should say, and director, and kind of internet sensation, Scott Weil.
Scott, hashtag man candy Weil. That's me. Yeah.
Hey, listen, let's do this. For those who aren't familiar with this somewhat groundbreaking medium, why don't you guys, Todd, why don't you just jump in here and tell us kind of what FBOJ is and kind of the gestation for it.
Oh, man. It was about 10, 11 years ago that this kind of started. I don't know if I should be proud of that or embarrassed of that fact, but
totally proud
that I've stuck with it all this time. It started with the idea of Cotton's character and
who's Cotton?
Cotton De La Croix, our main character.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. And
his quest to seek blood or justice. I won't go into too many details with what he's trying to do. And then it'd be his relationship with Yada, and that's kind of those two came about. But then I thought, it's okay, this has been done probably, you know, what am I going to do that's different? I mean, the character's a little different. And then I thought, you know, to do something completely unique, I needed to mash this story up. So I took these characters that I would refer to as like characters from an Elmore Leonard novel or a James Lee Burke novel, and put them in a John Carpenter or George Romero story. And so therefore we've got Dirty Harry meets Dawn of the Dead, or, you know, Charles Bronson and Death Wish, fighting zombies, but there's no zombies, but there's plenty of creatures. It's creature feature. It's a road picture. It's a chase thriller. And then at some point I thought, I hate all these stories with the technology and you have to, okay, he's got a cell phone. He doesn't have a cell phone. There's service. There's not service. Let's go back analog days. And I just thought, let's do it before cell phones and GPS and all of this stuff. And I thought that would be more interesting to survive more on your wits than technology. And I just was kind of looking through years that might be interesting. And I just came upon 1977. And so 1977, this renegade Texas Marshal is hunting two killers, murderers, across Texas and across the border into Mexico, where he ends up trapping them in an abandoned factory. And then we discover that the factory is not abandoned, and it's actually housing a post-World War II human experiment lab run by a fugitive Nazi.
Wow. Okay.
Other than that, there's nothing going on in this story.
Yeah, you know, it's just pure family fare, isn't it? I mean, bring the kids.
It is.
Yep. Popcorn, it is. Yeah. Candy.
It's been compared to Bambi, actually, a lot, which is
and
weird.
The Toy Story franchise, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see it, but...
Toy Story on LSD now.
Yeah. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids into Nazis, and that's good, too.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Now, Scott, I understand that... So, Todd, you're the creator... Scott, you're a co-creator, director, and you play a small role as agent, special agent.
Taylor. Several roles. Yeah, I'm definitely not a co-creator. Todd, this is all Todd's creation. I came on board. I've been a voiceover actor for like 25, 30 years. And then I started directing my own stuff, short films, web series, stuff like that about 10 years ago. And, so I came on board because I had just directed comedy, really. And there was just something so wildly unique about what Todd, this world that Todd created, that I said, you know, I'm going to put my hat in the ring. 4.5 years later, here we are. From an acting standpoint, I play Agent Taylor, but I also kind of know, Todd, how many, like 10 probably roles when it comes down to it.
Yeah, little roles here.
Yeah, because I cast and directed this thing, the podcast, in the middle of the beginning of the pandemic in 2020. And I cast and recorded 65 speaking roles over 3 months, I think it was, right, Tom?
About that, yeah.
Yeah. And so I tapped into my voiceover world and tapped some of the great voiceover actors out there, like Eric Bauza, Tara Strong, Maurice LaMarche, Phil Lamar, among many, many, many others. And they all play, as SAG contracts allow, three leads each. And I wanted to showcase that talent because I still believe that some of the best talent in Hollywood are the voiceover community.
Sure.
So when I play Agent Taylor, but, I can only pull so many favors and ask so many people to do these roles. And so you hear me throughout.
All right. Give me, just because I'm also a voiceover actor, give me a line as special agent first. And then I want to hear one of your wackiest characters. Do you mind just whipping this out?
No. Who's Taylor? What's Wally's character's name?
Wicks.
Wicks. He's not talking to Wicks. He's talking to, talking to, what's his name? He's talking to
Stephen Weber.
Stephen Weber. Weber's character, what was his name?
Junior agent.
I need you to get your butt down there and you find out what is going on. And then you get back to me, but you are not to leave that town. So he's kind of like old school FBI. Sure. Very by the book. Your voice actually would be great too. A little bit closer than Mike, you know, just that real authoritative old school guy. And then in the beginning, there's a Senate hearing going on. And you hear me as old Ted Kennedy, rambling on in the background going, you're telling me, Mr. Gettinger, that human experiments have been going on here within the FBI for the last 5 years. Is that what you're saying, Mr. Gettinger? And then I go, well, yes, Mr. Kennedy. It's been
that is good. That's dead on too. I love that.
It's enough in the background that, you know, everyone who knows me, they're like, oh, nice Kennedy. Nice Kennedy. Yeah. Wow. That was good.
You know what, though, just to get a little nerdy here, you can toy with that. I mean, I bought it right away. So you change the EQ a little bit. You know, put a little filter in front of your face or something. But anyway, that's I just dig that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's fun. So.
Now I was going to rattle off a bunch of names that some people in the audience may recognize. You just did that for me. But is Danny Trejo is in this gig too?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. One of my favorites. He plays a Mexican luchador named El Sangre del Diablo.
Devil's blood. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Well, so Todd, let's break this down in the world of pandemic threats and so forth and changing protocols constantly. I mean, I've seen it affect films as we know it today. In this entertainment business, has this kind of been, for lack of a better term, an easier fix because of the way that you have protocols and you can record voices off, you know, as Scott was saying, you could record a bank of voices and then mix them later? Or is all the thing done, you know, live on tape? And so that would kind of negate the first part of that question. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. It was, I think, a little bit of both. I think Scott and I weren't really sure what to do. We were like, are we going to rent gear and send it to people's houses? And will anybody go to a studio or any studios open? I mean, it was really a crapshoot. And like Scott and a lot of the professional VO artists, like, and yourself, have your own booth. And they were ready to go. But then, you know, Steven Weber and Wallace Langham, Spencer Garrett, these guys, you know, we had to find places for them to go. And that was
Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo. That was a funny one.
It was a funny one.
But we pieced it together. And I think that's why it took 3 months, you know, to try to get this. And to Scott's credit, he read against all of those guys and every character and pulled it off and was able to get those performances we wanted. But then
that was, you know what, Todd, that made it, it was good. You know, I'm an actor, but I'm a director. And so I was able to, in any one of these remote scenes, as opposed to the actors just acting on their own with nothing.
Yeah.
I was able to give them all a scene, whoever it was, you know, their home and their booths, or their, like Xander Berkeley, who's one of the great character actors of all time. He's lives in Maine, and he actually went into their little town in Maine and went into a studio there. And so I'm acting against him, which was tough. He's a great actor.
Me jump in here a quick second, because I want to drop some of these names, because when I was on your website originally, and I get to do this because I'm going to throw some photos up in the YouTube version of this show. I mean, Zach Grinier, I'm recognized, Xander Berkeley, Phil Lamar, Wallace Langham, Steven Weber, of course. The guy still looks like a million bucks all these years later.
Yeah, he's wildly talented. He's a funny dude.
Yeah,
funny,
and then
funny guy.
Another great actor, and Scott, you're gonna love this. Spencer Garrett. There's a guy with a set of pipes, man.
Oh yeah. Again, another wildly talented. We just kept going. Everyone who came on, we'd be like, "All right, the bar is really high, so I am gonna push you really hard." And
yeah,
because it's super high.
And Sarah Clark, where do I know Sarah from?
She was in Bosch. She was Bosch's
love interest.
Yes.
Who got murdered. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was in 24. She was in Twilight. Yeah. She's awesome too.
She's married to Xander Berkeley.
Oh, that's so hilarious. Okay.
And so I asked, when Xander came in, I was like, and it was, look, everyone's at home. No one was out on any sets. And I said, hey, if your wife Sarah is up for coming in and playing a couple roles, we'd love to have her.
Yeah. Well, Scott, how come you look like an agent? You look like you reminded me of the agent in Matrix when I first saw you. And now you look like you're in prison. So I'm just trying to figure.
And I've got about 10 more. I've 10 more minutes. Okay. All right. Yeah, 10 more minutes and then I'm out of here.
I don't want to shortchange these others, but we're going to push this later, but you can go to forbloodorjustice.com and just look at this. I mean, I don't know how you did it. This is just a beautiful gang of talent. And Todd, I want to ask you, you made a comment almost self-disparaging, which I don't think you should, because I think there's an ongoing theory. I've certainly lived by it. I think you probably live by it. We're probably about the same age. Is that, you know, it takes about 10 years to make in Hollywood. So 10 years can be make it in Hollywood. It can be 10 years to make a project in Hollywood. I mean, for those guys, I did 3 tours of duty out there. So I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah.
And you know, but I say, yeah, it takes what it takes, right? So, but the fact that you had the spark ignite and you hung in there with it, I mean, you got to love that.
it's not in my nature to give up or to quit. You know, I got that from my folks. There's times I question it. Am I crazy for keeping on this? And excuse me. I find every time I go back to it to write something more or to edit something else or to talk about it or to go for artwork, I still love it. I still love this project, you know, and it was 10 years ago. I had several different ideas in my head, notes, and I said, I got to pick one and just stick with it, see it through to the brutal end. And if it's either going to make it or it's not. And this was the one. It just has so many things that kind of form, so many elements that form my childhood and the Carpenter movies and De Palma movies and all the novels I read, the Stephen Kings and the Robert Ludlum and the spy thrillers and Marathon Man and 3 Days of the Condor. And I just felt like, God. And there was a while, like, is anybody going to dig this or is it just me and my crazy? Everybody seems to dig it. So, but yes, I've stuck with it and thank you. And we'll see if it takes flight.
Well, I got to shoot to a direct question, and if I'm out of bounds here, just tell me and I'll shut up. But, being an independent filmmaker myself and having directed and produced and acted as well, I know that the one thing you're always thinking about is, A, how am I going to get the money to feed the machine that I want to see happen? Number two, how do I make the money back so that I can do this again, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, how, and again, you can tell me to screw off, but how are you going to make money off of this thing? That may not be the number one objective, but I know that to be able to pull in this kind of talent and, you know, get up the website and get the, and the printing on this is just delicious for crying out loud. So
thanks, man.
That's the million dollar question.
We've self-financed it ourselves to this point. And the podcast will make money through advertising eventually. We struck a distribution deal with a great company called Revolver. And we've got high hopes for larger audiences, massive audiences finding us. It's a slow burn, this one. We've listened to a lot of the competition out there. And we just kind of keep coming back and going, God, man, we know it's good. It's really good. And our cast is insane.
Yeah.
I was able to get almost everybody to work at Screen Actors Guild deferred rate, which allowed us to bring in this talent. And everyone said, yeah, okay, I'll do that.
Explain to the audience that doesn't know what deferred rate and SAG rules means.
Well, if I'm going to bring in an actor and I'm doing this as a union gig, which we did, right. We have to pay them a very specific amount of money for this specific kind of contract, which is called a new media contract under the Screen Actors Guild, SAG-AFTRA new media contract. And what the union, because a union knows independent filmmakers are always beg, borrowing, and stealing, right, David? And you do what you can to get this thing done. You just, you know, you're just blood, sweat, and tears every single day, 24 hours a day.
Sometimes
more tears, yeah. And I reached out to a lot of my community of people. I've been around as an actor for 25, 30 years, and I know a lot of people. And everyone was kind enough to do this as a favor and love the material and showed up ready to rock. So we didn't have to pay most of our talent anything up front. And so when this thing starts to make money as a podcast, we pay our talent immediately. So that's it. And then our goal is to turn it into a television series. So we're hoping to get out and start pitching it as a TV show, in the next month or so.
Okay. So you've just taken my very next question. Great timing. So here's what I had, Janusz Neumann on, former KGB spy, we'll call it for lack of a better term, who is also launching a graphic novel and it's just totally awesome off the charts. And we were talking about a similar thing about, you know, it takes so much blood, to use your phrase, blood, sweat, and tears to get this thing going. The medium of graphic novels itself is a changing world. It's, you know, it was comics, now it's graphic novels, now it's, you know, it's going to gaming and so forth, and now digital downloads infinitely more economically feasible for us creators than perhaps the printed medium like this. I can't even fathom. Here's my point, a lot of words to say. My question being, where is it going next? So as we were saying, the great thing about a graphic novel is it's a storyboard perfectly delivered to your director to go, these are the shots, let's set them up. So it makes it for an easier sell in Hollywood. I think I'm pretty safe in saying that. So TV is the next step, right?
That's the dream. That's the end goal. Yeah. We knew when we started the graphic novel, that we weren't Marvel, we weren't DC, we weren't Image, we weren't one of the big guys that can pay artists and writers $500 a day, $1,000 a day to work on this stuff. And we knew it was going to be kind of a hard sell, that we're new, we're nobodies. We don't really know what we're doing. We're independent filmmakers, so we kind of know how to tell a story, but we're passionate about it. So let's create this and we'll give it away and see if we can create a fan base and see if people dig it and see if they like our grassroots indie style and spirit. And hopefully they kind of latch onto that. We're the anti-hero. We're not superheroes. Although I love all the Marvel movies, but we didn't want to do that. Yeah. So that's kind of where it came from. And we could tell a story that took place that was a period piece that had giant set pieces and creatures and blood and shootouts and, you know, millions of dollars worth of production value. We could distill down to a graphic novel. And then when I met Scott, it was, you know, he was kind of over the same mind. We thought, wow, this podcast, you know, this was what, 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, when podcasting obviously was around, but it was still relatively under the radar. Yeah. This is another potential great way to tell this story that we don't have to raise millions of dollars.
And prove what we have too. So now we've got a graphic novel and we've got the podcast. So I feel like, you know, the next step is, you know, we walk in and you pitch it and you're like, hey, look, you want to see what this thing's all about? It's here you go. You know, we've got it, and we've got it with a great cast. So you can look at it visually. And we're also in the process of creating a really interesting mashup of the graphic novel and the podcast together.
But have you worked numbers? Curious as an indie filmmaker myself, have you worked numbers of what you think, let's just say, an episode? And are you looking at kind of the 44 minute, a little bit longer? You're looking at the Walking Dead kind of look feel, or are you talking about more CGI?
Todd, I don't see it CGI. Do you?
No. I just being old school, you know, I'd rather have practical effects and makeup effects and a la Walking Dead.
I'd shoot 44. I'd shoot it in 35mm personally.
Of course you would, because it looked fantastic.
Because it would look good, man.
And it would be so inexpensive, right, Scott?
You know, it's not that. One of my buddies from college is a guy named Steve Bellamy, who's head of Kodak Film. And Steve's done a great job of really keeping film vibrant. And obviously, a lot of A-list directors still shoot in film. But I'm hoping that Kodak will partner with us when we're ready. So we'll see.
We do have a pilot script as part of our pitch package and pitch deck and all that.
Yeah.
What it's going to cost, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's period piece. So period piece always, you know, it's always a little bit more expensive because you know, although it's middle of nowhere. So we could shoot this in the middle of the desert in Texas or New Mexico or.
I was going to say it's 77, year I graduated high school. Yeah. And the period could really be boiled down to a couple of vehicles and wardrobe, not to tell you your job, but I'm like, especially with this Texas, Mexico, or Southern Texas thing is, couldn't be. So you got 9 episodes. If you go, and folks, we're going to put this up on the screen, for bloodorjustice.com, you'll be able to see it in its entirety on Revolver. podcast.com. But here's the question. You got 9 episodes currently. I listened to half of them. How many do you foresee? Is 9 the full tease, and then you're going to wait for the next step of money raising and so forth? Or will you go ahead and keep the episodes going?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'm full of good questions, baby. They're so cheap, too.
Yes. The reality is we probably need to raise some money to do the rest of it. We have plotted out 5-6 seasons worth of probably 12 to 16 episodes per season. So this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is, if you get invested in the story, it's got a long way to go. There's lots of twists and turns. There's lots of backstory. There's lots of offshoot stories. So it can go and go. But the brass tacks of it are, yeah, Scott and I have called in about every favor we can to get this far, financed it this far. And what it's going to take to make season 2 is we're not quite there yet.
Yeah. I applaud you guys, because I know how hard this is. And you know, when you're moving through life on a wing and a prayer, and you got these great ideas, and you're just knuckling it every day, and you're going back to some of the same friends, and they see you coming, going, oh geez, here comes another freebie, right? Yeah, but I admire you, and you know, tenacity is what it takes, besides your talent and drive and so forth. So,
thanks, man. You probably have too, as an independent filmmaker. I found that my acting community is a really supportive community when it comes to personal passion projects, because everyone has them, and not everyone gets them to the point where you actually do it. And so I've found that, you know, most of my friends who are all working actors and have been for a long time, they're like, yeah, man, let's do it.
Well, and especially in a case like this, I mean, folks, you're going to go to this website and you're going to see these photos and you're going to headshots, and you're going to know automatically, you're going to start rattling off all the TV shows and miniseries that you've seen. You're like, wow, this is legit. You know, and these are not just some local high school play people. These are heavy
dinner theater.
Yeah.
We've got all the working actors in there. It's character actors from across the spectrum. It's cool.
What haven't I asked that you would love for my audience to know about on the Thriller Zone? I mean, we're talking about great media, podcasts, thriller novels, thriller screenplay writers, directors, actors. I mean, we're covering all the gamut, but what haven't I covered that would you want to really make sure? Help these guys walk away knowing this.
It's very, very, very film-like. You know, it's not, the pace of it is not like this.
Sure.
The story is very deep. Todd also did all the sound mix on it as well. He's a very, very talented guy. Thank God he saved us a lot of money too. And so when you put your headphones on, and you put some good headphones on, you are going to be immersed into this world that Todd created. And we've had so many people get lost in our show. And I hope that you all are able to get lost in our show too, because it is immersive. And you know what? Sit back into it and you will not be unhappy.
And to that point, Scott, you would tell the actors, say, okay, we're just going to start off with a wide shot, and then we're going to slowly push in, you know, and then we're going to be in close, and then you're going to open the car door and get out of the car, and you're going to walk across the lawn, and you're going to go inside. And we tried to really feel that space. So you felt it, and every location has a character to it, you know, has a feel and different little sounds. And yeah, we put a lot of it's very visual for a
it breathes.
Podcast.
Yeah, you know, David, when we were editing it, we actually had to let the first editors go because it was hard for Todd and I to get on the same, for them to get on the same page with us, and because it needed to breathe more, and that's it just took a while to get there. That's all.
Yeah,
yeah, and the score we get
and the score
our composer. Killer job. Yeah.
So for... good. Yeah. His score, Ken Bauer. I've worked with Ken. Ken's been kind enough to do a lot of stuff for my independent films that I've done. And he's talented. And everything he did for us in this is spot on and raises the hair on your neck.
I would go through the script and say, okay, from the minute two until minute six and a half, I need a tense, low rumble.
Yeah.
It's like, you want a 4.5 minute tense scene in the score? Like, yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And then there's an 8 minute one, you know, and he killed it. He killed it every time.
Yeah. And for the people, for the folks in our audience who understand this world of directing and filmmaking and TV and series, et cetera, not to be media channel agnostic, is that they get it, you know, and everyone knows that score enhances everything. Like, I was watching the new season of Ozark last night.
Oh, is it up?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, yeah.
Just dropped.
Just dropped. And the sound design on this thing with those little tink, 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 you know, the pieces of sound that really are kind of all into themselves, and they're not really, they're not systematically orchestral in any way, shape, or form, but they're kind
of... It's like another character. It's a part, it's part of the story, right? Yeah.
And that's what I love it. And it's so unique to that show, and it sets its own tone by just being slightly, you know, off center.
Yeah.
And... So that's key. And number two is, someone was asking me the other day about, hey, does it really matter about the sound? And I'm like, let me tell you a little something, my opinion. People will put up with bad visuals if they can hear it well, but they won't put up with bad audio to be able to see it beautifully. So, and it's perfect for podcast and audio drama, because in this, and you're right, Scott, the difference between listening online and then downloading it and listening to the headphones, vastly different. And you really are, especially if you close your eyes, you're immersed in that world. And I applaud you guys for that.
Oh, thanks, David. Thank you very much. Yeah. Todd did a ridiculously good job of mixing it. So
thank you.
Great.
One other discussion we had early on was how long to make it. We had a friend who just said, well, I don't think anybody will listen to a longer than 5 minute piece. It's like, 5 minutes. Can we do five? Do I want to do 5 minutes? Or should it be 12 minutes? And then at some point we just said, no, it needs to be like half an hour. An hour. And then other people would say, well, you got to have a narrator. How are you going to walk people through this story? You know, if it's going to be cinematic, like, no, we don't want a narrator. We want the audience to feel their way through it. That was a challenge, but a fun challenge to me.
You know, Todd, I could see maybe that rationale, that thinking being legit pre-pandemic, but I think pandemic has changed the way we digest material. So I'm thinking to myself, the way that I'm listening to podcasts now and audiobooks, and just, you know, we're doing one or two different things while ingesting that, I think we need to be sure to give the audience the credit that they're due, that they got that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You don't need to spoon feed me or tell me what's happening. All I got to do is jump in it with 2 feet and start swimming. I got it, you know.
Yeah. There's so much material out there that is dumb and panders and says, here, let me take your hand. Oh, you know what? I'm going to take both of your hands.
Yeah. Well, we're going to put some credits down below on the website so that people can find out some of the people behind the scenes, like the pencil and inks and so forth, because I love to give those guys credit too, because that's so much of the magic, especially when you're talking about the graphic novel itself. But if you'd like to learn more, folks, forbloodorjustice.com. You can follow them on Twitter, as I do, at Blood or Justice. And then you can go to both Facebook and Instagram at forbloodorjustice. This has been fun, guys. Todd Niss and Scott Weil, really appreciate the time. And man, I wish you guys humongous luck.
Thank you, thanks, Dr. Temple.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
It's been fun. Thanks for having us. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Let's do it over cocktails next time.
Keep your golf game. Keep your golf game going, and maybe I'll come down there and kick your butt on the course someday.
Challenge accepted, sir.
Let's do it. Let's do it. I'm in.
Challenge accepted, sir. I was going to say too, I wanted to say, God, guys, if you needed any more extra voices in any way, shape or form, let me come play in the sandbox for free. Cause I just,
hell yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. No, maybe not the free part, but really, you know, get in there with you guys.
Thanks, man. No, we get to that next season. You're in there. Absolutely.
All right, guys. Thank you once again for joining us on the Thriller Zone.
Thanks for having us, David.
Thanks for.
I'll fund where Todd and Scott, right? ForBloodOrJustice.com, the website, the graphic novel, and so much more. Okay, let's talk about next week. Amelia Namark has a new book called Behind the Lie, which happens to drop on my birthday, so what a great birthday present. It's a novel that, according to some people, say, for readers of Harlan Coben, you're going to love this. It's cram-packed with suspense. What else do you need but more of Behind the Lie? That's next week right here on another episode of The Thriller Zone.